The EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan Lewis brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's EWTN Rome Bureau Chief, Joan Lewis.
I'm on vacation for a few weeks, but never fear. In my absence, my wonderful radio colleagues at EWTN have put together the best of Vatican Insider. Welcome to Vatican Insider and another special while I'm away on vacation. Today, I'll bring you to the extraordinary and historical papal residence of Castel Gandolfo. Roman pontiffs have spent summers here for centuries, enjoying stupendous panoramas and a climate that is far cooler than Rome's, which can be quite torrid in July and August. Pope John Paul affectionately called it Vatican No. 2. Castel Gandolfo has a long and colorful history and possesses beauty to rival that of the Apostolic Palace and Gardens in Rome. Now, Castel Gandolfo is one of a number of small towns located on beautiful sprawling hills that surround and overlook Lake Albano, about a half-hour drive southeast of Rome. The lake, which fills an old volcanic crater, is 961 feet above sea level. Fed by underground sources and drained by an artificial outlet, it is said to have been built around 398 BC. It's about 2 square miles in size and has a maximum depth of 558 feet. Located on what was once known as Alba Longa, a city in ancient Latium, reputedly the birthplace of Romulus and Remus, Castel Gandolfo and the cluster of nearby towns are known as the Alban Hill Towns. Romans also like to call these picturesque towns the Castelli Romani, because of the fortified castles originally built on those hills by noble families, around which small towns grew and flourished. Each castello bore the name of the lord of the manor. Castel Gandolfo took its name from the Gandurfi family. Originally from Genoa, they built a small square fortress with crenellated walls, an inner courtyard, several towers, and an adjacent garden on the hill where the town that bears their name stands today. Now, the Savelli family later bought the property and owned it until 1596, when, because of a debt they could not pay to Pope Clement VIII, the land became patrimony of the Holy See, forming the nucleus of the papal residence that exists today. In ensuing centuries, the property underwent many vicissitudes, including the purchase of additional lands, villas, and gardens, and renovations and additions to the original palace. In 1623, Cardinal Maffeo Barberini was elected pope, choosing the name Urban VIII. Even before his election, he had spent vacations in Castel Gandolfo and had even built a small home near the walls of the original castle fortress. Once he became pope, he decided to make this spot his summer residence, readapting and enlarging the old fortress. One of those who assisted him in this work was the illustrious Carlo Maderno, who in 1603, after completing the facade of Santa Susanna's church in Rome, was named as principal architect of the new St. Peter's Basilica. Maderno designed both a large wing that overlooks Lake Albano, as well as the left part of the facade as seen today from Castel Gandolfo's main square. A modest garden was also planted at this time. Pope Urban VIII moved into Castel Gandolfo residence on May 10, 1626, just 6 months before the completion of St. Peter's Basilica following 120 years of work. In 1627, the Pope's nephew, Taddeo Barberini, acquired land and vineyards near the papal residence. 4 years later, he acquired yet more land and buildings, and the entire complex became known as Villa Barberini. Today, this is all an integral part of the pontifical property in Castel Gandolfo. Now, Pope Alexander VII, he reigned from 1655 to 1667, completed the work done by Urban VIII, including the long gallery that bears his name, with the assistance of John Lorenzo Bernini, noted painter, architect, and sculptor. Bernini also designed part of the gardens of the papal residence, and they can still be seen today. Bernini, of course, is best remembered for having designed the splendid colonnade of 284 pillars that embraces St. Peter's Square. The 19th century saw the unification of Italy that greatly affected papal holdings, principally the vast papal states. The papal states, in fact, under Pope Pius IX, were incorporated into the new Italy when the peninsula was unified in 1870. From the loss of the Papal States to the Lateran Pact between Italy and the Holy See on February 11, 1929, under Pius XI, no pope ever left Vatican City for a holiday in Castel Gandolfo. With the Lateran Treaty, Villa Barberini now belonged to the Holy See and officially became part of the papal residence complex in Castel Gandolfo. Pius XI helped to restore the buildings and land that had been unused for so many years. He even bought several orchards in order to set up a small farm, not only to produce goods for consumption in the Vatican, but to underscore the importance of agriculture. This last acquisition brought the total acreage of the papal property in Castel Gandolfo to 136 acres, or 55 hectares. Now, Vatican City State is 109 acres, 44 hectares. So in Castel Gandolfo, more of the total acreage is dedicated to the farm, 62 acres, and to gardens than it is to buildings. The real work of restoration at Castel Gandolfo under Pope Pius XI began in 1931. In 1933, the Vatican Observatory, run by the Jesuits, was moved from Vatican City in Rome to Castel Gandolfo because the city lights were too bright for astronomers. Pius XI also built a new chapel in which he placed a replica of Poland's Black Madonna Częstochowa. Between 1918 and 1921, he had been, respectively, apostolic visitator and then nuncio in Poland, and he had a predilection for the Black Madonna. This chapel remains unchanged since his day. The Pope's first summer visit was in 1934. His successor, Pope Pius XII, especially loved Castel Gandolfo and spent a great deal of time at this residence, except for the years of World War II. However, during some of the worst moments of the war, Pius allowed the inhabitants of Castel Gandolfo and nearby towns to take refuge on the papal property, given that it enjoyed the status of extraterritoriality. After the landing at Anzio in 1944, the citizens of Castel Gandolfo were allowed to stay at the papal palace, whereas those from other towns were allowed sanctuary in the Villa Barberini property. Pius XII's first post-war visit to the lakeside villa was in 1946. He returned there often, and he died there October 9, 1958. Pope John XXIII, who reigned from 1958 to 1963, also enjoyed sojourns at Castel Gandolfo. He started two traditions here as pontiff, praying the Angelus with the faithful on Sundays in the inner courtyard, and celebrating Mass in the parish church of St. Thomas Villanova on the August 15th Feast of the Assumption. John Paul II, then Cardinal Karol Wojtyla of Krakow, Poland, spent several hours here on October 8, 1978. He returned 17 days later as Pope, having been elected on October 16th. He spent most of every summer here and often came for several days after an especially long and arduous foreign trip. Benedict XVI, as we saw, also enjoyed the beauty, peace, and subdued rhythm of summer life at Castel Gandolfo and came here every summer for a couple of months after his election to the papacy in April 2005. He lived here for 2 months after he resigned and left the Vatican on February 28, 2013. I earlier mentioned one part of the pontifical property that's called Villa Barberini. Here we find many buildings, including the home of the director of pontifical villas and apartments used by the Cardinal Secretary of State and the prefect of the papal household in the summer. The formal gardens, a 62-acre farm, and the remains of Emperor Domitian's palatial 14-square-kilometer home are also part of Villa Barberini. Dr. Petrillo, former director of the Pontifical Villas at Castel Gandolfo, began to serve the Holy See in June 1958, and he was named director of the Pontifical Villas in 1986. He authored a book entitled The Popes at Castel Gandolfo, from which I took much of the information I'm giving you now. Saverio was an excellent, knowledgeable, and discreet guide to the papal property and residences the first day we met. Dr. Petrillo began his work in Castel Gandolfo at the age of 18, when he was asked to take the place of a Vatican employee who was ill. In the ensuing years, he familiarized himself not only with the physical property, the farm, gardens, and buildings, but with the multi-century history of the villas as well. His office, as well as other administrative offices, was located in one of the buildings of the Villa Barberini part of the pontifical property and offered splendid views of the Castelli Romani and, in the distance, Rome and the Mediterranean. Now, separate from Villa Barberini, but only a short distance away, are the Apostolic Palace and other gardens. The palace, the building overlooking the lake, is where the popes reside and where the faithful can join him, used to be able to, in the courtyard on Sundays for the noon Angelus. At Castel Gandolfo, Dr. Petrillo told me on my first visit, the Holy Father usually has the same basic rooms he has in Rome, a study, private chapel, dining room, and library. The rooms, as is the entire palace complex, are on a smaller, more intimate and homey scale. Everything here, he said, is very intimate, warm, and family-like. Even the pace of life is slower, more suited to man. On our tour of the farm, Saverio Petrillo pointed out that it produces eggs, milk, there are 25 cows, and yogurt on a daily basis. These are brought early in the morning to the Apostolic Palace in Rome and are sold as well in the Vatican City supermarket under the name Ville Pontificie di Castel Gandolfo, the Pontifical Villas of Castel Gandolfo. Olive oil is also produced, but in small quantities. Once, Vatican City even had its own bakery. Saverio told me some 60 people work year-round on the papal properties in Castel Gandolfo, including gardeners, tree trimmers, those who work at the farm, electricians, other maintenance people, etc. Only about 20 permanently reside in buildings on the property. Now, the heliport, which is not far from the farm, was first used by Paul VI in 1963 when he visited the cathedral at Orvieto. Continuous use of a helicopter for short papal trips began during the Holy Year of 1975, when Paul VI would return to Rome for the weekly general audiences. Pope John Paul II, a very athletic pope, asked that a swimming pool be installed at Castel Gandolfo to be used for health reasons. Although I never saw the 60-foot-long pool on my tour of the papal villa and gardens, Dr. Petrillo told the story that when the Pope heard that some people objected to the cost of a pool, he humorously said a conclave would cost a lot more. Now, this was John Paul's explanation about how effective physical exercise was in helping him bear the strains of a tiring pontificate. The beautifully maintained and manicured formal gardens of Villa Barberini have been used by popes throughout the centuries for long walks and moments of prayer. The flowers, bushes, and trees of many varieties and trimmed to perfection in geometrical shapes provide beauty, seclusion, and tranquility. Covering many acres, the stunning formal gardens also provide lovely vistas of the Roman countryside. There are statues, fountains, and a labyrinth of walkways and roads, one of which dates to Roman time and is paved exactly like the old Appian Way. One olive tree in the gardens has a special story. Just an olive branch at the time, it was given by King Hussein of Jordan to Pope Paul VI during his trip to Jerusalem in 1964. The late king's son and heir, now King Abdullah, was able to visit the gardens and saw the fully grown tree. Ruins of Emperor Domitian's villa can be found everywhere, and occasionally one will see a niche with a statue from the villa. The Emperor Domitian, who ruled from 81 to 96, had built a 14-square-kilometer villa on this site. Constructed on three levels, the top was for servants, the middle for the imperial family and their guests, and the bottom was the crypto portico, which is in near-perfect condition 2,000 years later. The crypto portico, reached now by a staircase built into the gardens, was constructed to provide the emperor and his guests with a cool place to walk, talk, and sit to escape the summer heat of Rome. Enormous in size, it resembles a tunnel, with one end open and the other closed. The closed end has a raised, stage-like level, accessible by a staircase. Today, there's a large cross there. The ceiling is curved, and on the western wall, there are windows at the top level. These were once covered with alabaster to let in the late afternoon setting sunlight, but not the heat. Also at Villa Barberini is the Antiquarium, a museum that houses a small but prized collection of artifacts from Domitian's villa that were discovered over the past century. Only restricted numbers of scholars are ever allowed to visit the Antiquarium. That includes busts, statues, columns, portals, and tables made of marble and various stone, to mention but a few objects. So here you have it, the beauty and the history of this beautiful papal residence at Castel Gandolfo.
EWTN EWTN Radio Classics is our 24/7 teaching and devotionals channel straight from the EWTN archives. Go classic with EWTN Radio Classics online at EWTNradio.net and on the EWTN app.
This is all about, let's go ride Harleys.
Let's get quiet and go into contemplative prayer. So I want to show men that real Christians are cowboys. If you're sold out for Jesus, there's nothing more masculine you can do.
Bear Wozniak leads a rolling retreat across the United States. Join these real Catholic men as they ride from the Atlantic coast of Florida to the Pacific coast of California, all the while going deeper into their relationship with the Lord. Long Ride Home with Bear Wozniak, Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern on EWTN-TV.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of Vatican Insider and a special report I've prepared on the Vatican's Room with the Heavenly View. That's my name for the Vatican Observatory. Given the enormous interest, and I think we can safely say mania, for the August 21st, 2017, the rare total solar eclipse in parts of the United States, I thought you might be interested to know that among the millions who watched this eclipse were a good number of Vatican astronomers. The Jesuits who staff and run the Vatican Observatory, also known as the Specula. They watched from Castel Gandolfo, from Tucson, Arizona, and from Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Yes, Kentucky, because that's where American brother Guy Consolmagno, director of the Vatican Observatory since 2015, watched events unfold as a guest of Saints Peter and Paul Parish. I've known Brother Guy for a number of years and have interviewed him on several occasions for Vatican Insider. And in 2015, I had a serendipitous encounter with Vatican astronomers in Hawaii. At the start of my 2015 vacation, on my flight to Honolulu from Los Angeles, I was seated next to David Giardi, an astronomer from Caltech University. He told me that the IAU, the International Astronomical Union, was holding its 29th General Assembly in Honolulu. This was a two-week-long meeting that brought together over 2,500 astronomers from 75 countries around the world, including Vatican City State. Brother Guy was kind enough to send me the names of the Jesuit astronomers who were at this meeting, and I was able to interview Father Chris Corboli for Vatican Insider. Now, when popes spent the summer at the Apostolic Palace in Castel Gandolfo, one of the many hill towns or Castelli Romani southeast of Rome, they enjoyed cooler air, a slower pace of life, and a view of lovely and placid Lake Albano, which fills an old volcanic crater, and the beautiful sprawling hills which surround it. The palace at Castel Gandolfo also offers popes another more spectacular view, a view of the universe through the telescopes of the twin observatory towers atop the pontifical residence. The Specula, as the Vatican Observatory is also called, is not only one of the most highly respected observatories in the world, but is actually one of the oldest astronomical institutes, dating back to 1582, when Pope Gregory XIII formed a committee to look at the scientific data and ramifications involved in a reform of the calendar. One of the committee members, Father Christoph Clavius, a Jesuit mathematician from the Roman College, wrote books favoring this reform, and, with some of his brother Jesuits interested in astronomy, confirmed studies done by Galileo. Astronomy for centuries was considered the queen of sciences. As Father Clavius wrote in 1570, astronomy uses geometrical and arithmetic demonstrations, which, in agreement with the opinion of all philosophers, arrive at the first degree of certitude. Astronomy thus became a subject of great interest to the papacy, and in ensuing centuries, Roman pontiffs founded three observatories, that of the Roman College, the Observatory of Capitoline Hill, and the Specula Vaticana in the Tower of the Winds in Vatican City. Telescopes in the Vatican occupied different locations over the years. In 1935, the Specula was moved to Castel Gandolfo because the light emanating from the city of Rome was too strong to allow for accurate observation and research from within the city. For the same reasons, a new telescope was built in Arizona in the United States in 1993. The Vatican's state-of-the-art VATT, Vatican Advanced Technology Telescope, is located on Emerald Peak at an altitude of 3,200 meters in the Mount Graham mountain chain northeast of Tucson, Arizona. The telescope became operative in 1993 when the Vatican, in collaboration with Stewart Observatory at the University of Arizona in Tucson, used new technology in making the telescopic mirror, thus entering the era of the advanced technology telescopes. The telescope was made by using a rotating furnace, which shortened the construction time and offered a mirror that was lighter in weight than its predecessors. This method of making mirrors has been used with great success ever since. Pope Pius XI, in a speech on September 29, 1935, at the new observatory in Castel Gandolfo, gave it a motto, Deum Creatorem Venite Adoremus, Come, let us adore God the Creator. And he said he rejoiced at being present at, quote, the inauguration of this new, and might we say, improved Specula Vaticana, in this our residence at Castel Gandolfo. He also said it is quite well known that the Supreme Roman Pontiffs have for many centuries needed astronomy and have called on it to help in the placement of holy temples and especially in the calculation of the date of Easter. Now, Pope Leo XIII is actually credited with refounding the Vatican Specula over four decades earlier. In July 1890, he approved the directives for the Specula Vaticana and on March 14, 1891, promulgated the motu proprio ut mysticam as a mystery, writing that he wished to refute those who charged the Church with being obscurantist and closed to scientific progress. Leo XIII said he intended to reinstitute the specula so that everyone might see clearly that the Church and her pastors are not opposed to true and solid science, whether divine or human, but that they embrace it, encourage it, and promote it with the fullest possible dedication. Successive Roman pontiffs have always supported the Vatican Observatory and its directors, who have always been priests, scientists, and, for over 100 years, Jesuits. In fact, given the importance of their work, 35 lunar craters bear the names of Jesuit astronomers. The current director, as we said, is American brother Guy Consolmagno, a native of Detroit, who spends part of each year at the Castel Gandolfo headquarters, part of the year teaching astrophysics and doing research in Tucson, and sometime each year traveling and lecturing. He was named to this post by Pope Francis in 2015. Popes, and in a special way John Paul II, have not only supported the specula, but have written and spoken extensively on the science-faith dialogue. In an October 31, 1992 address to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, Pope John Paul called the case of Galileo Galilei, who was condemned in the 17th century for his heliocentric theory, a case of tragic mutual incomprehension that now belongs to the past. The Pope was addressing the Academy on a report given by Cardinal Paul Poupard on the results of 11 years of work by a special commission established by John Paul in July 1981 to study and definitively resolve the Galileo case. The year 1992 marked the 350th anniversary of Galileo's death. Saying the Galileo case was shelved, John Paul added, "The underlying problems of this case concern both the nature of science and the message of faith." In Galileo's time, he declared, "The majority of theologians did not recognize the distinction between sacred scripture and its interpretation, and this led them to transpose into the realm of the doctrine of the faith a question which, in fact, pertained to scientific investigation." Though the main body of astronomical observations and research is done today in Arizona, the Apostolic Palace at Castel Gandolfo remains the headquarters of the Vatican Observatory. Before it moved to a new site in the Papal Gardens in 2009, the observatory staff worked out of the top floors of the Apostolic Palace, right above the private rooms of the papal residence. In 2009, the specula moved from the summer papal palace to new headquarters in the papal gardens at Castel Gandolfo. A former convent, the building was specifically remodeled with the needs of the specula in mind, and space is divided into three areas. One, the ground floor is the public area and workspace, offices, libraries, labs, and a small museum of historic scientific equipment, and a valuable meteorite collection. Area number two, used primarily by the Vatican Observatory summer schools. And three, upstairs is the living area for the Jesuit astronomers, including the community chapel. Among the precious objects in the museum is a valuable mineral collection that includes pieces going back 4.5 billion years. A piece of moon rock brought back to the Earth in 1972 by the Apollo 17 mission, and fragments of meteorites from Mars. Though the interior is completely new, the building itself dates back to 1631, the same year that Princess Caterina Savelli of Albano built a convent for the Clarice sisters, also known as the Poor Clares, on this site. During the Napoleonic War, sometime between 1791 and 1810, this building was sacked by French troops. With the unification of Italy in 1870, the convent was closed and the sisters moved into the palace in Castel Gandolfo, along with a community of Basilian nuns who had been exiled from the part of Poland then controlled by Russia. In 1929, with the signing of the Lateran Treaty, the two groups of sisters were able to move back into their old headquarters, now incorporated within the gardens. The building again was subject to the ravages of war in 1944. Following the invasion of Anzio by the Allies and their slow march up the coast to Rome, the building was hit twice, on February 1st and February 10th, 1944. After the war, Pope Pius XII approved the reconstruction of the convent. The building was also damaged during an earthquake in 1989. Repairs and restructuring of the building were completed in 1998. In 2007, work began to completely restructure the end of the building that belonged to the Basilian sisters who had left the premises to match the needs of the astronomers. After 2 years of extensive work, the new Specola headquarters were dedicated by Pope Benedict XVI on September 16, 2009. The Clarice sisters continue their work and prayer in the northwestern end of the building. I hope you enjoyed this particular program on the Specola. It's been a fun place for me to visit and even more fun to tell you all about it.